today, Angie and I talked with Judith Regan, the publisher and the brains behind Regan Arts, a multimedia company. And she's the woman who interviewed O.J. Simpson in 2006, but the interview was allegedly lost forever. Judith was told it was destroyed. She talked to us at length about the interview, about her feelings, and she shared some pretty interesting stories. Check it out. Mike Opelka here with my co-host, Angie Austin. It's the Angie Austin Mike Opelka program. And Angie, I get to introduce you to somebody I've known for a little bit of time, somebody who's kind of in this Pluto-like orbit in my life. I only really bump into her every 7 or 8 years, but she's back again and just a delight and a wonderful person, but a powerhouse, a force of nature. I'm talking about publisher and the CEO at Regan Arts, Judith Regan. Judith, meet my friend Angie Austin, and hello.
Hello, Mike and Angie. Great to be with you.
Hey, Judith.
Again, every 7 years.
Yes. We'll have to make it a definite celebration every 7 years to meet. But in this case, discussing something pretty serious. And I did watch the special involving your interview with O.J. Simpson on Sunday. So I'm pretty excited to go through the details of what was going on in your head. So I'll let Mike kind of lead here. He's got a few clips as well.
I do. Okay. I do. But Judith, before we get into this, one of the things we like to give to our high profile guests like yourself is the opportunity to correct any horrific errors in your Wikipedia bio, because that often seems
we'll
to happen.
We'll be here all day. You know, I have never participated in the Wikipedia nonsense. And, you know, when people run smear campaigns against you, which a few individuals have done in the past, they go to the wiki page and they put their propaganda on there, and you could spend a lifetime trying to create a clean record. I don't think you can do it anymore, because the internet is like a cesspool of garbage, and you could spend your life pursuing the truth on the internet, which the trolls will try to change all day long, or you can just live your life and ignore it. So I've basically chosen to ignore it.
Well, I can tell you, I did a cursory check. There isn't anything too egregious. So you're having a good day in terms of Wiki Day. So I'm happy to report.
Okay.
Based on my knowledge, which, you know, is again, it's the Pluto-like orbits every 7 years.
Right.
So, Judith, we're looking back at last Sunday in this special, which did really well. No doubt it would have done well, because we're all still fascinated with O.J. Simpson. This murder had celebrity, it had sports, it had drugs, it had Hollywood, it had all that stuff, and then a verdict that so many people didn't believe. But why did it take us 12 years until we were allowed to see this?
Well, that wasn't my decision. As you may know, I did the interview in late 2006. I did it on a Sunday. It was supposed to air two nights that week, and the rug was pulled out from underneath me. News Corp made a decision to withdraw everything, the book that was going to be published and the tape. I was actually told at the time that the tape was destroyed, the books were all pulped, and nothing would ever see the light of day. So it wasn't my decision. At that point, I had a company. I had sold my interest in the company, and I was now an employee. And as you know, if you're an employee, you have really no final say over anything. So I was fired, the books were pulped, and I guess the tapes were put in a vault somewhere and forgotten.
Well,
and was that decision made?
It had nothing to, I did not make that decision. I would have aired it then. It should have been aired then. I got a call a couple of weeks ago saying Fox wants to air the interview, and they're doing it. And that was that.
Wow.
I mean, wow, because who made the decision not to air it? Was there so much public outcry that possibly he would profit off of this?
You know, I think that story is one that's never been told. I'm not sure it will ever be told. It's a long and complicated and very involved story that you know, needs to be told at some point, not today, but I think it was political. I think there was a controversy that was ginned up about the book and about the interview. No one had seen it. Everyone in the room, and there were, it was a five-camera shoot. There were probably 40 people in the room when the interview occurred in 2006, and it was really traumatizing for everyone to listen to him and to hear what he had to say. It was traumatizing for me. I walked out of that interview, and literally as I was walking out, and the interview was about 4 hours long, as I was walking out, I got a phone call basically telling me I was about to be assassinated, and I just had no idea what this individual was talking about, but apparently the way the story was spun from the very beginning, not by the Browns or the Goldmans, but the minute it was announced in a very negative way, and it went from there. And the Goldmans and the Browns had not seen the book, had not seen the interview, really only based their decision about what to say about it on what the media, what they were hearing in the media, and of course they objected to it at that time. And then later, when the Goldmans went after, the book was canceled, the Goldmans went after the rights to the book. They were granted the rights by a court. They published the book, and after they had an opportunity to actually read the book, they realized it was a confession and had a change of heart about it. The book was a huge bestseller, even by a little publisher, and I went on with my life, but that's what happened. It wasn't my decision, and I really, you know, whether or not I have published many, many, many people, many, many hundreds and hundreds of people over the years, I do not agree with all of them. I find some of them to be reprehensible politically. Mm-hmm. I find some of them to be morally reprehensible. But to publish means to make public. And I don't think the role of a book publisher is to sit in judgment of people and tell them they're wrong. That's not what a publisher does. I have always believed in free speech. I have always believed that people have a right to tell their stories. I've always believed that people have a right to have a point of view. Hopefully they do it in a respectful fashion, less and less so these days. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I, for some reason over the years, because I published all sides of the political spectrum and people with a wide range of views, usually one side or the other, somehow thinks it's appropriate to target me when they feel that the material is reprehensible. So back in the day when I published Howard Stern, he had a lot of haters. I mean, that was in the day before they had email, and I would get literally every single day boxes of hate mail.
Wow.
Death threats, vicious, racist, sexist, like horrific. Horrific stuff, you know, anti-Semitic stuff, really, really like dark and twisted. And then, of course, when the internet came into existence, all of these trolls get on the internet and spew their hate and venom. But back then, it would come in the form of mail, and it was literally thousands and thousands of pieces of mail that they would vent towards me. And the same thing happened, not as dramatically, when I published Rush Limbaugh, who was, you know, a conservative radio mm-hmm. talk show host. There were all the people who hated Rush Limbaugh, and then I got that hate mail, but not as much hate mail. I think the most hate mail that was ever generated was for Howard Stern, strangely. But and Robin Quivers, I published Robin Quivers. The vicious, the hatred is so intense and bizarre. It just really shocks the conscience. And even in Howard's book, Howard is just such a fascinating person. We used a lot of the hate mail that he got back then on a regular basis. I don't know if he still does, but back then, you know, he got piles of hate mail every day and had his life threatened all the time. And we used some of that hate mail as chapter dividers in the book Private Parts.
Oh, my goodness.
He was mocking them and you know, he just wanted to show how absurd it all is.
It's the best.
But look, I published, you know, and so much of what I've done is mischaracterized in the media. Even the New York Times, in the review of the O.J. Simpson interview, and this was fascinating to me, even the New York Times, and they have an attitude about me because I publish a wide range of points of view over the years. They dropped a note in, and I've heard it before, and it was one of my enemies who used it, saying that I am known for publishing salacious memoirs. And I would ask the question, tell me, you know, of the thousands of books that I've published, give me a list of the, like, top 10 salacious memoirs that I've published.
Well, I'm gonna come up with my list, Judith. I've got my list of salacious memoirs you've published. I want to read them off, but we need to take a short break, and we're gonna come back with Judith Regan because I have questions about the OJ interview and what would happen if it happened today. Angie Austin and Mike Opelka will be right back with Judith Regan. You like that? You can hear the entire interview Thursday morning on our radio show. I'll post a link on it on Twitter. If you want to hear the second half of the interview, find our podcast, Angie and Mike, on SoundCloud and coming to iTunes. Angie and Mike on SoundCloud. Till next time, testudo, my friends. Testudo.